You're listening to Lucid Cafe. I'm your host, Wendy Halley. Aloha. Thanks for tuning in. Before I introduce you to today's guest, I've got an update on my This Just Might Be Crazy Enough to Work virtual reality project. I mentioned a couple of episodes ago on the Iboga episode that a student team at the Emergent Media Center at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont, was working on creating a taste of a virtual reality environment designed to quickly bring the user into deep relaxation. My goal is to offer this service to employers to take like 4 or 5 VR headsets into the workplace so that employees can be transported to dreamy, stress-free land in just minutes. So a couple of weeks ago, I went to the college to take the experience for my first test run. One of the students had shot a 360-degree video of a local Vermont forest, and then the other student was creating some virtual trees and plants and cool animations to incorporate into the video to give the experience some dimension and a magical quality. So there I was. I eagerly put on the VR headset and waited for the experience to load. The video fades in, and I find myself looking at a blurry, pixelated scene that kind of looks like a forest, but not really. I was warned that the 360 video they shot was not the best quality, but my heart still dropped because I had to find a way to say that it pretty much sucked. Well, no one seemed surprised by my feedback. It was a video camera issue and not at all a reflection of the student's work, and I hope I was able to convey that when I was giving my feedback. It was a huge learning experience for all of us. Probably more for me than anyone else, but there you go. So we were working on a plan B option when my buddy PJ, who's been so supportive of this project, finds the perfect remedy, a pre-built computer-generated virtual forest that's photorealistic and affordable. The reason why I went with 360 video in the first place was because it was the cheapest way to go. So the Emergent Media Center has now shifted gears and is in the process of building a completely virtual forest for me to show potential customers and investors. I went back to the center last week for a trial run of an early version of the virtual forest, and when I put the headsets on this time, I had a big-ass smile on my face. I was in the forest. Holy shit, what a difference. I'm kind of excited. I should have a final version in early December. Stay tuned. Now for today's guest. When I first met Susan Lloyd at a work-related business meeting 16 years ago, I knew we'd be friends. It wasn't logical, I just knew it. She's been through a lot in those 16 years, but has always managed to use humor, even in the darkest moments. A little bit about Susan. She is the Director of Administrative Operations and Human Resources. Very fancy title. At Washington County Mental Health here in central Vermont. She is a member of their Wellness and Employee Assistance Committees and has collaborated with Lucid Path, yours truly, over the years to offer creative alternative healing modalities for staff. She has a personal and professional interest in supporting people interested in learning more about themselves, their coworkers, and communities through their journey to well-being. She is an active member of several community theater groups and enjoys performing stand-up, improv, and storytelling. Please enjoy my highly entertaining conversation with my friend, Susan Lloyd. Susan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
As you know, I've been hounding you to come on my show since I had the idea to have a show. Can you imagine why?
I think you want me to share my story.
Yeah.
Get out of my head, Wendy Halley. I'm here.
Yeah. No, because you're an amazing storyteller. You've had some powerful experiences in your life, and you don't mind sharing your stories.
That's true. Because I'm a poster girl.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You've done it in public settings.
I have.
Which we'll get to in a little bit. Where do you think your healing journey began?
Officially, I would say many years ago when you and I were teaching at CCV. I don't know if you remember this, but we went to the Main Street Grill and I was kind of feeling sorry for myself. And we walked out on the street and you were talking about some help that you were giving people. And I said, "Who's here to help me, Wendy?" And you said, "Do you really want to know?"
Asshole I am.
Followed by, I don't know, some ethical thing like, "I need your permission. I don't usually do this on a street corner." We had this whole conversation, which you probably don't even remember.
I actually don't remember.
Yeah, that's fine. And at the time, I was at a pretty low point in my life. And you started to tell me that you had this vision that there was somebody that was waiting to help me. And I was skeptical, to say the least. And you started describing this person that I had never mentioned to you, and you would have no reason to have any knowledge of this person in my life. And what struck me at the time is you said, "This person is a father figure in your life, but he's not your father." And I just felt the hair on my arm standing up. And I was,
really?
Yeah. And it was this guy that was a part of my mom's life for many years, and he died very suddenly, and I never got to say goodbye, and I didn't really have any closure with him, and so he was always sort of rattling around somewhere in my subconscious, probably. And so I think when we had that conversation on a street corner, it really opened me up, I think, to the possibility that there were things that I had no understanding of, and that I probably had some work to do. And that's probably what started me thinking about how to get on that road to being more thoughtful about life decisions and things that were going on for me.
Okay. Well, I have a very vague recollection of that conversation.
So it wasn't something dramatic. It came in stages. Slowly.
So it actually started with me as a conversation.
Yeah, you were sharing some of the work that you were doing.
Okay.
And I was listening to the help that you were providing for other people in this kind of space. And I was thinking, wow.
That's a nice way to put it, in this kind of space.
Space.
In quotation marks.
Yeah, if you can see me, I'm mocking Wendy right now.
Yeah.
But I think...
She is.
I guess my point is it wasn't like I had a... you know, debilitating car accident and had this monumental need to know what was happening. And it dawned on me and came to me over time in baby steps.
Okay.
And then I did have some pretty big events in my life, which, as I tell people the story about how I know you, I always frame it by saying, this is an ongoing joke with us, is that I will randomly call you and say, "Wendy, help me. I'm fucking freaking out," you know?
Yeah.
So for big and small things.
Yes.
So
that has happened.
Yeah. That's the thing.
So I'm curious, what compels you to share your story or your stories with others?
I think the concept that I think of myself as a fairly jaded and cynical person as a baseline. So I guess I feel compelled to say, if somebody like me that can be, you know, just a total jerk, you know, self-absorbed, narcissistic person like me can see the value of these kinds of journeys, then I think there's hope for everybody else. And so I do feel compelled to tell the story because I see the doubt and mistrust in others, you know, when I start talking to them. And like you, you have to be really careful who you say these things to, because some people can't handle it. You know, they freak
true.
Out. So you have to kind of test the waters and say things like, "Are you open to thinking about different things and looking at life in a different way?" But I think at the end of the day, I feel like I was pretty hardened and cynical and closed off personally. So if this kind of work and this healing can get through to somebody like me, then I feel like there are a lot of people out there that are like on the fence wanting to take that leap of faith, but just not being able to do it. So if I can make a difference, and I feel like I have, I've had a couple friends that I've said, "You got to go see Wendy," you know, and they've all had really positive experiences. So
It's blown me away that you've been doing that over these years.
why,
I mean, it's
why wouldn't I?
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, of course, I'm thrilled that you've
yes.
been doing that.
And you're also very humble. You know, I think you have touched people in a lot of different ways that...
Appropriate ways.
Well, appropriate, that's right. Yeah. Said the HR person in me. Not inappropriately, because that would be another conversation, probably on your other blog.
My other podcast.
Podcast, yeah, that's right.
No, that... We touch people really
you
appropriately
touch people appropriately.
In that podcast as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're very humble and... I think you have a gift that, you know, unfortunately, the society doesn't really honor or value in the way in which which it should. You know, I think if people were more open to these kinds of experiences, there wouldn't be this shroud of misconception and misunderstanding and people freaking out all the time, especially today. This culture is so messed up. You know?
It's a bit messed up,
it's
yeah.
a bit, that's an understatement. Yeah.
Well, and I have shared... in a public forum, how much I've struggled with what I do as a clinician and then as a shamanic practitioner and having to find a way to reconcile those two and not sound like I'm batshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I probably do sound like I'm batshit, but
yeah.
I'm aware of it.
And that's half the battle.
Isn't
right?
it?
That's the first step.
That is. It
admitting
is.
That you're batshit.
Yep, exactly.
And surrounding yourself with people that are okay with that.
Yeah,
really,
no.
The second step, yeah.
And that's why you're here today.
And that brings me back to me, yeah.
So you really see yourself as selfish and narcissistic, huh?
I mean, I'm working on it, but I think initially when I started this journey, I was very good at compartmentalizing different areas of my life and just choosing not to look at the ones that were difficult or uncomfortable or led to conflict, you know. So I think I'm getting better. I hope I'm evolving.
Witnessing you, I would say you're most definitely evolving.
Excellent.
And I think, I mean, it's cool that you shared that because I think it's a common coping skill that a lot of us do is compartmentalization, putting those difficult emotions in a little box and storing that box
right.
really far away in our
exactly.
unconscious
yeah.
because it's sucky.
Mm-hmm.
But what have you discovered about opening up some of those boxes?
It's terrifying. It's also exhilarating and validating at some level. We had this experience recently, you and I, where I was like, when I drive away, I'm always like, it's not that I didn't have an inkling or a level of insight into some of the things that you share, that you see, but there's something really profound in hearing that from somebody outside of your own head. You know, to have somebody say
like a validation.
Yeah, it's a validation. It's also, I mean, one of the things I like about the shamanic healing is you kind of give this emotional homework, I call it. Like, you know, here's what I see. This is what I'm seeing. And this, you know, have you thought about this before? Is this making any sense? You know, and then you drive away and you're like, oh yeah, I should really think about that a little more. Or try making some of these changes, but it doesn't feel like judgy or punitive or anything. It's just like you have these options to try to improve whatever's going on for you, and you can choose to ignore it and come back and see me in a while, or you can take it to heart and try to make some changes. So it's also scary because it's like, oh my God, I gotta do this, you know.
But if you do, if you actually take yourself up on it, what have you found?
Well, the payoff is amazing. You know, I think things happen for a reason. You know, I think the universe sends you stuff in strange, unexpected packages. And so I think once you are open to the idea and you're willing to do some of the work, you really feel things starting to fall into place. You know, and I've had a number of people come into my life in the last couple of years, and it's like, oh, it's you. You know,
it's cool, isn't it?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a big fan of the whole synchronicity, like the things coming together, like right when you need them.
Yeah, it's all very shamanic. When you start kind of tapping into that zone, that there's like this beautiful orchestration that everything kind of is falling into place because you're tapping into a part of yourself that has been longing to be tapped into. And if you, like you were saying, if you ignore it, yeah, life gets really uncomfortable and you end up, it's almost like the symptoms can become louder if you ignore it. I don't know if you ever experienced that.
Yes,
but
yes.
You're familiar with that?
Shut up! One of the first experiences I had, I remember one of the, you saw an owl in, when I was here one time, and I started laughing when you told me that you saw this owl, and it was great because you were saying, you know, the owl helps you look into those dark places that you're unwilling or unable to look at, you know, nocturnal darkness. And all I thought was, there's been this big ass owl in my backyard for weeks, just that deep guttural. And I was like, shut up.
It sounds like a cow.
No, it's sorry. A cow that owl. Was a bad impression. More like a
And that's not and like so a cow too. All
that right. Sorry, but think about that was a cow. But thinking about that, here was a physical manifestation of this animal in a tree in my backyard, and I'm lying in bed saying, "Shut up, like go away."
That's pretty perfect.
It's a pretty perfect.
Yeah.
Representation of an unwillingness to look into the dark places of your soul. And then, so when you were telling me about this owl, I was like, I guess I shouldn't have been such a jerk, you know?
Well, and so when you actually start looking into these, you start opening these boxes and looking into these dark corners, as you put it, do you find that it's as bad as you imagined it would be? Or is it just as bad as you thought it would be?
Well, it depends on the situation. I've had situations where I thought, hey, that wasn't so bad. I got this. And other times, like, this is really scary.
Yeah. And so what do you do when it's really scary?
I mean, it's sort of the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. You know, at the end of the day, I would rather know what I'm up against, even if it is scary. So I think and I'm not perfect at this by any means, but I think I've gotten better at accepting that there's things I can do and things that I should be working on. And so I just try not to be overwhelmed and not let fear get in the way of doing the work that I need to do, I guess. I don't know.
Is it getting easier as you've done it more?
Yeah, I think it gets easier because it's less intimidating. And, you know, one of the things that I like about talking with you is you tell people things in a way that they can hear them. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, you're so thoughtful about the way you describe things, you know, like you would never just say like, oh my God, you're a jerk and you got to fix that right now. You're going to burn. You're going to crash and burn and horrible things are going to happen to you. You always say things in a way that, you know, hey, have you thought about this? Is this making any sense to you? Getting the person to kind of acknowledge that what they already know and just bringing forth things that they already know they should be doing. So that's the kind of validating part. Like, yeah, I get it. I need to be focusing on these things and looking at them in a slightly different way. But when you use the imagery and the visions and the folks that show up to help and painting that picture for people, they can see a way through that.
Yeah, I was going to say that's
you're
not
giving them a way to get through this experience. You're not
it's
freaking
so
them out. Like, so I see death and destruction. Thanks for coming. Like, you frame things in a way like you're going, you know, like, this is what I'm seeing. And what do you think about that? And what do you think you,
right.
This
and
means?
So, and it's just me sharing what I'm perceiving.
Right.
Yeah. And to me, those visionary experiences are, it's kind of like, it's such a gift to be able to witness those narratives within someone, because they always, I'm seeing how they, well, I'm hopefully perceiving correctly how they're playing out within someone in a very unhealthy way. Mm-hmm. And I can witness that and I can report back, this is how I saw it. And then my helping spirits step in and they change the narrative and connect you or the person with power. And so it's almost like a movie or a fairy tale that always has a happy ending.
Right.
And you come out triumphant on the other side. And so you take that narrative with you and you, it's yours.
Right.
It's
like, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying people that are like fearful of going on this journey are probably thinking like, she's going to look inside me and see I'm a hopeless jerk. And, you know, so that's what I would say to people is it's not like that. It's you're helping people to kind of reclaim their power to do what they need to do to be happier and more successful and more in control and give them the power to make sometimes difficult decisions within their own life. But it's not scary in the sense, I think the first time I came, I was like, oh, she knows what I'm thinking, and I'm a jerk, and I'm not worthy, and you know, like, and I would guess people that are ignorant to the process might think that you're getting inside their head and messing around with their ideas, and it's just not like that. You're actually trying to help people discover their own power and set them free to go forth and use that for good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, how I usually describe it is that we're perceiving the bullshit and we're trying to...
Is that the technical term?
Yeah. It's my... You know how professional
yes,
I am.
Yes, I love that about you.
Yeah. It's like the bullshit that's getting in the way of your truth, your right. personal truth, your authentic self or whatever. If you can get the bullshit out of the way, then your authentic self, which is already inside of you, can come forward. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to go looking for it, or you have to, I don't know, go spend 30 years in a mountain cave and find it somehow. Mm-hmm. It's there, already there. We're just kind of like cleaning house in a way. Yeah. And that comes in the form of these really usually self-defeating, unhealthy narratives, belief systems, whatever, however you want to put it, that are playing out inside of you. And we all have them. I mean, we all do. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me to do this work, a lot of my initiatory experiences and getting ready to do healing work was me cleaning out my house so that when I start traipsing through somebody else's house, my shit doesn't get in the way of your shit. And I'm seeing as clearly as possible. That's my responsibility.
This is like a colonic cleansing. This is like a psychic cleansing.
I couldn't have put it better.
Well, hopefully without the discomfort.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's not like that.
No.
But it's symbolically like that,
exactly.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things that's been cool to witness in you, because I've known you since not long after I moved here. It was probably like, I moved here in 2004 and moved to Vermont and then met you through my work. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on...
We need an anniversary.
I know.
We need a cake or something. Yeah.
I vote for cake.
Cake.
Yeah. So that's been a long time, but to watch, I mean, you've been through a lot of shit in that time.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to hopefully share a little bit about that, some of the trials you've been through, mm-hmm. because it's powerful, it's potent stuff. But to see you blossom over these years, it's wicked cool, because some of the things that you've done, you've really pushed yourself in these directions that when I first met you, I couldn't see you quite doing those things. But then once you started doing them, I'm like, holy shit, of course. This is, you're a natural. Mm-hmm. So some of the things you've been doing, you started acting. You mm-hmm. started getting your ham on.
Yeah.
and it seems like you're really thriving, and it sort of woke up this part of you. You did some stand up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a bucket list thing. I had always wanted to do stand up, and I took a course, like a class in it, and actually did an 8-minute stand-up routine at the Vermont Comedy Club, and it was probably within the top three single most terrifying things I've ever done.
I could see
and
that.
And also incredibly rewarding when I walked off stage. I was just, I mean, it sounds corny, but I was really proud of myself and was shaking for like the next half hour,
so what
even
was,
after the experience.
Why was that one of the scariest things you've ever done?
So I was joking with some friends that if you had to list out like things that really terrify, you had to rank things: singing, dancing, performing, stand-up, improv, and you had to rank them sort of 1 to 5. The vulnerability with stand-up is I had written the material.
It's all you.
It's all you. It's your own words. You're alone on the stage. You have some technical things to overcome. There's microphones. Stand close, but not too close. You want to engage the audience, but not allow hecklers. You need to work the room and get people drawn into what you have to say. But at the end of the day, I put a lot of stock, right or wrong. I think I'm a funny person. And so for me to like test that
it,
theory
yeah.
in a pretty profound, intense, 100 people staring at me in a comedy club in Burlington terrified me, because it's not like I'm up there reciting Shakespeare, which is acting, which is scary in a different way. Am I mm-hmm. going to get it right? Am I going to forget the lines? Am I going to forget my props or have the wrong costume on? that's scary in a different way, but somebody else, you're playing the part of somebody else. This was playing myself.
You, yeah.
So there's something really vulnerable about that. And if you pride yourself on thinking that you're funny or whatever it is, well-written or a good storyteller, whatever, and you fall flat, that sucks. Like you have this image of yourself, like I can do these things and I'm pretty good at it. And so I was literally losing my mind. I really was. And it was because it was a course, we had to write the jokes over a period of like 6 weeks. So what I thought was really funny in week one, by the end of week six, I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever said.
Really?
Because you had to do your act, the same act. Once you committed to what the act was, you worked on polishing it and pauses and moving the content around. And so nothing from week one to week six, I no longer found any of that funny.
Really?
And so my classmates would politely giggle after 6 weeks of hearing the same jokes.
Okay.
But you don't really know until you're in front of 100 people.
And how did it go? And did you kill?
I kind of killed. And I was really proud of myself. But until I got that first laugh, I thought I was going to throw up.
It seems like such an intense, like, Yeah, I'm glad you didn't throw up, because that would have not been funny.
And improv was the same thing. I also took an improv class, and that is another variation on a theme, because again, people in the audience say, you're a firewoman and you're in a disco, and they're giving you bits and pieces and you have to be funny on command. And it's intimidating and terrifying in a whole nother way.
That seems impossible.
Because at least with the stand-up, I was honing neurotically the commas and the where I was going to pause and all that. Improv, you're just,
on the fly.
You are on the fly trying to be funny. And more often than not, it falls flat. And that's how improv is. It's just like baseball. Yeah. You strike out. People get one or two hits in a whole game and they're happy about it. Not everything hits. So to die on stage is like one of my worst nightmares.
But
it's a rush
harder
when you get it right, you know?
Which was harder?
I would have to say hard in different ways. The stand-up I took much more personally because it was my words. So that was terrifying. The improv, I didn't feel I had to own it because the audience was shouting out ridiculous things. You work at a Dairy Queen or Dunkin' Donuts. So it was like, well, that was a stupid idea. I can't be held accountable if it's not funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was scary having to make shit up.
Yeah.
Not that it was their fault. It's just like, I didn't write this shit. You just handed me a pile of shit. Yeah. And I'm going to try to make it funny. That's different than the stuff you wrote is shit. You know?
It's all me.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a... It, and much like acting, when you get it right or you feel you got it right and people clap or laugh or come up to you in some way, it's like, not that I know this to be true, but it's like a drug. I mean,
I was going to say like a rush. Yeah.
It is a total rush. It feels totally euphoric, like amazing, just amazing. And that's, so then I sort of got into the storytelling thing, which I think... is going to be my thing.
That's
the one that's really resonating. Yeah. Yeah.
So what have you done around the storytelling?
So I took a class up at the Flynn, and the woman that taught our class actually works for the Moth, the national organization. And so that was really cool. And I talked one of my friends into taking the class with me. So that was fun. So I had somebody to carpool with. And at the end of our class, we had to tell a story, and we had a lot of constraints. We were timed. She gave us feedback on how to set up the structure, and it reminded me of English class in high school or college. You had to have the arc of the story and create characters and have callbacks. And so for me, as you know me, Wendy, I can't do anything in 5 minutes or less. So for me to be able to tell a story and cut out huge chunks that I thought were like hilarious, was really painful, but it was good. It was good to kind of have a formal structure. And so we did a field trip to Arts Riot to see the Moth, and it happened to be February, and the theme was love, like love hurts or something, love stinks or whatever it was. And we got to be judges, our class. So that was really cool. So I set this goal for myself that I was going to tell a story at Arts Riot. And the class, we sort of were talking and we decided that it would be cheating to use the story that we worked on for class.
Ouch.
At the moth. I know. After I'd worked so hard to polish this tale. So I told a second story.
Spontaneously?
I had like a couple weeks to work on it.
Okay.
And it's a story that had been rolling around my head for a while, and I'd written like a short story, a bit of a play about that. So I took some writing that I already had and crafted it into that. And it went okay. I forgot a couple pieces, but I got a lot of applause.
So you have to do it from memory.
Yeah.
You can't sit
and
read.
You can't have any notes.
Or stand and read.
Yeah. So you really have to...
You have to know it.
You have to really know it. And they time you and they kind of get the hook if you go over. So
really?
That part was hard for me. I then went to another moth event. There's this group called Ex Tempo here in central Vermont, and they had an event up in up near Greensboro somewhere.
Which is, yeah, in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
kind of place.
And that went really well, and I told a story there, and people came up to me and said that was a great story, and that was really, really cool. Really cool.
So, do you have desire to be a writer?
I enjoy writing. I'm so super busy right now. I think one of the things that I learned in this class was to keep at it. You know, and the instructor, the teacher said to us, if you really want to be a storyteller, you should always have like 8 to 10 stories in your pocket that you can pull out, you know, whatever the theme is.
Okay.
So my goal right now is to build out my little library, because there's a lot of different storytelling organizations and they generally have a theme. So there's going to be a storytelling event on Labor Day weekend up at the Phantom Theater in Warren. And I don't know what the theme is yet, but I want to find out, because then
so
I
you
have,
can prepare.
Because then I could come up with a story. You could either, you know, and you're not supposed to repeat. So that structure is actually helpful to me, because I was one of those people in school, like I needed a deadline and I needed to know, like,
right.
The story for the month of October is fear, because it's Halloween, right? So if I knew in October something scary, then I have, you know, a couple months to come up with something. And I think that would help me to kind of create this archive of...
That's awesome. And storytelling is the oldest form of
yes.
entertainment, especially
yes.
the oral tradition of storytelling.
Yes, exactly.
So it's really, I think it's in our DNA. You know, I think that's why the moth experience has been so huge.
Yeah.
Because it's going back
yep.
to that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you would be willing to share one of your stories.
Yeah, sure.
Here on the podcast.
Yeah. So do I need to set this up in any way, or should I just dive in here?
I think go ahead and whatever makes sense to you.
So this is the story that I told for my final exam, Wendy Halley, for my moth storytelling class.
Okay.
So you can be the judge. You can grade me later.
And this is
maybe.
My first time hearing this story.
Okay, no pressure. So it's called A Healing Journey. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not. Okay,
you're
here
not
I am.
No, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you're ready. Okay.
Go for it.
The roots of your friendship are as shallow as the tumor on your leg. After 9 months of misdiagnosis, I had a core biopsy and was awaiting the results. I knew instinctively this alien presence was cancer. I called my shaman friend, Wendy, help me, I'm freaking out. And she scheduled a healing session. I know what you're thinking, and I was just as cynical about this as you, until this happened. The growth on my leg began to throb and cut off my circulation. My skin turned a grayish blue, and I felt clammy and numb. I called and she said, I'm on it. Later that night, as I lay in bed, I am not making this shit up. The sheets began to move. My skin got really taut, like someone was sewing up my shin. And then inexplicably, I felt a rush of warm energy from the tip of my head shudder through my entire body and exit out my toes. After that, I had no more pain or circulation problems. So yeah, I called her. The journey began with me laying on her massage table. I felt cold, skeptical, and tense. She placed her hands lightly over my solar plexus, then moved slowly down to my lower left leg. She gently cupped her hands over the mass which had taken up residence. She moved to my heart and began scooping out invisible debris. She leaned in and blew hot, warm air into the center of my being. I felt warm and oddly safe. She took a few moments, collected herself, and recounted what she'd seen. I don't know much about shamanism, and I'm not very intuitive about my body, but when I saw Wendy fighting back tears, this is never a good sign in this or any other realm, I knew my journey was just beginning. The solar plexus is where people collect their energy, hopes, dreams, and desires. She encountered a concrete wall. An image of the Hoover Dam popped into my consciousness. Metaphorically, I'd constructed this wall to keep people out. She and her helpers tried to get inside. They saw a small fissure at the base of the wall. Clearly, a very small part of me wanted help. A 12-year-old version of me stood defiantly on an island and said, "I want to be alone." They left her with an owl spirit helper to look into the dark places that we fear thinking about consciously. When they checked back, she was busy building a bridge to the mainland. Her people wouldn't let her tell me what was wrong, but the look on her face said it all, confirmed what I suspected, what I would find out definitively a few days later. I had a rare form of cancer called myxofibrosarcoma. There are very few doctors in the country with the level of expertise required to treat this diagnosis. Adding to the complication, the tendrils had attached themselves to my bone, so I needed an orthopedic oncologist who specialized in both the treatment and surgery of this one-in-a-million variant. I was grateful that one of these specialists lived in Boston and fortunate that my tumor was external. One of the nurses at Dana-Farber said to me, "Do you know how lucky you are? If this had attached itself to an organ, you'd be dead before anyone caught this." Wow! Lucky. So Wendy gave me some meditative music for my MP3 player and instructed me in some mindfulness techniques. As I lay on the radiation table, I decided to take matters into my own hands. I imagined the 80s video game of Asteroids. In my mind's eye, I visualized the radiation blasting the cancer cells. Each beam of energy entering my body shrank the tendrils and blew the tumor apart. I felt a shift and slowly began to reclaim my power. I can laugh about it now, but I will never forget her words. "If I tell you what's wrong, you'll go into a downward spiral of depression from which you may not return." Thank you, Wendy. That's helpful. "There's some good news, though," she said. "I spoke to it, removed its malevolence, and convinced it to stop growing. The rest is up to you, Susan." Of course, I was thinking, if you can speak with it, why can't you get rid of it? But I guess I knew the answer. Apparently, I had a role to play in all of this? Damn it. Personal responsibility? Facing my demons? I hadn't signed up for any of this. My inability to connect with people or be vulnerable with others had caught up to me. My heart was encased in ice due to years of self-protection and not letting people get close. She ceremonially removed it, burned it, and placed it back inside of me. When I protested that I knew hundreds of people and had lots of friends, she said simply and without irony, "The roots of your friendship are as shallow as the tumor on your leg." Ouch! Of course she was right, but who wants to face that unflattering bit of reality? In a rare moment of interference, my higher self showed up, also not a good sign. One's higher self is a dispassionate observer of our life choices. I wasn't leading the life I was meant to lead. I appreciated this gift of insight, though it was quite intimidating. You're supposed to connect with people and the earth. And it turns out that facing the thing we fear the most is the reason we've chosen this life in the first place. Great! So in review, I was an emotionally stunted 12-year-old facing a downward spiral of depression, had a series of shallow friendships, and had managed to piss off my higher self. Oh yeah, and I had cancer! This will be easy. I'd like to tell you that the clouds parted and I completely reinvented myself, but it was more like a reboot than a rebirth. I made some small changes. I let people bring me casseroles. I helped out more in the garden, and I did my best to be vulnerable and share myself and the burden of this journey with my friends and family. A year later, I was lying on an MRI table in Boston. My IV blew out, my leg was cramping up, and the headphones weren't drowning out the loud, whirring sound of machinery. And I said, "Wendy, help me. I'm freaking out." And boom, she popped into my consciousness. And she said, "Susan, I'm busy. You got this." And I started laughing because, of course, my shaman friend would tell me I got this. And I got this. The end.
Holy shit.
Right?
That's a fucking cool story.
Right? It's not bad.
Look at you. Look at you.
And look at really, you. This is a love fest, Wendy Halley.
Well, and let me just say that I did not have you on the podcast.
to say nice things about you?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't think I'd come in and shit on you, did you?
Well, no, but,
no,
I would hope not.
You didn't expect that level of...
I would edit that shit out anyway.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is, I mean, that just the, everything we talked about prior to you telling that story really encapsulates the experience, facing your fears and having to go into those dark places and that cancer experience. I remember distinctly when I put my hands over your shin and I was like, oh,
yeah.
And I didn't want to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just.
Yeah.
Well, because here's the deal, too, is what if I was wrong?
Right.
And so it didn't feel like it was for me to tell you.
Yeah.
And so I was hoping that I was wrong, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But also the journey that you had to go on. I mean, that having something like that happen to you, like a near-death kind of experience, hearing that if it had manifested anywhere else in your body, I mean, that would have been it.
Yeah, when the woman said that to me, I almost totally lost my shit.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
And so it's like a sort of a death and rebirth, very shamanic experience on this level that's really hard to articulate, I think.
Yeah. And I think... that's what I was trying to say earlier. Like, you frame things in a way that people can hear it without getting totally freaked out. And I don't know if you remember this. I remember this really clearly. I was in Burlington in my car, pulled over on the side of the road, and you and I were talking on the phone, and you said something to the effect of, you know, like, you could totally heal yourself. You could really, if you were really, you got this kind of thing, and you were being really positive. And I was like, dude, you just told me I was emotionally stunted as a 12-year-old. Now you're asking me to do graduate level meditative, you know, like baby steps, Wendy.
Can't blame me for trying.
No, but I'm saying, like, you're so positive and strengths-based, you know, even when you're dealing with people that are like clearly,
well,
not ready for the graduate level advanced training on heal thyself.
But
I appreciate it.
The potential.
Appreciated the offer.
Yeah, that's nice. But the thing is that when I'm in that state, I see the truth. And part of that truth is that, yes, you can do this.
Right.
So if you push the bullshit to the side,
right,
then you can access the I can do this part.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe it was just, I was just trying to do
something. No, I'm teasing you because it struck me as funny. And so it also... for people that don't know us, that don't know that we've known each other for a long time. I mean, for me, again, back to the stand-up thing, humor is a huge part of my life. So if you can imagine me on a cold, hard slab in Boston, they couldn't find a vein. I'd been there for 8 to 10 hours trying to get these annual cancer screenings taken care of. And the IV literally blew out and my arm blew up and the dye went into my tissues and in my forearm. And I looked like Popeye, like after the spinach. And I was so distraught, and I had these headphones, and the music wasn't working, and the machine was loud, and the people were kind of being jerky, and there was this they put this mural like up above me, above the machine, and if you've ever seen like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon,
yeah,
there are all these like bamboo trees, and they kind of these people dart between the trees, and it's pretty cool. I could see figures in the trees jumping around. I thought, well, that's really trippy, you know. And I was laying there and I just got really frustrated and I literally closed my eyes and I saw you in my mind's eye. And I remember this because I could see like what you were wearing, the mini blinds over your shoulder. You were in session with somebody at the EAP and I'm calling you and you're like, yeah, I'm busy. And I almost fell off the table because I was laughing. Maybe somebody else couldn't hear that level of bluntness, Wendy, is the moral of the story.
Yeah.
Like, you know me.
Yeah,
like, you were just like, and I remember saying to you later, dude, what the hell? And you were like, oh, I've been working on splitting my consciousness and I'm trying to get better about like being with somebody and being really present and still being able to help other people. But to be sitting.
Did I say that shit?
you're full of shit. But to be laying there, and if you could just imagine me laughing. And of course, I can't tell anybody.
It's the best.
Yeah, I just checked in with my shaman. They'd, you know, take me down the hall and put me in the psych wing, you know. But I was literally lying there laughing. And then I saw you like a week later. This was when we were still up at the old CCV up on the hill.
Yeah.
And I remember just like accosting you in the faculty lounge, like, you abandoned me in my time of need, and just laughing. Like, but that's exactly what I needed.
Exactly.
And that's the point of the story, right? Yeah. Somebody else, you might have said like, oh dear, let me help you. Are you going to be okay? But with me, you're like, you're on your own, Loind. And that was okay. Because that's what I needed to hear, because I can be a whiny, needy person just like anybody else, you know? And I wasn't dying. And the person you were talking to might have been experiencing the death of a loved one or something that they needed your attention more than me. But it just so struck me as funny that it still makes me laugh just thinking about
it. It is pretty hilarious.
And that somebody as dense as me that would not feel like I had anywhere near any kind of a gift like you
and
have.
Look at you
and,
did it.
And then I saw you. I'm like
fucking remote viewing into my office.
I know.
Which is a breach of confidentiality, by the way.
I know. It's a HIPAA violation, I'm sure. But yeah. So back to what we were saying at the beginning, like if I can have that kind of experience, then I think it's available and accessible to anybody on the planet, really.
It is.
And that's why I think I tell people about you, because I feel like there are people that need to know that this is out there. You can tap into your own strength in ways that you could never have imagined. And you have the power to change yourself and your little corner of the world.
I couldn't have put it better
so
myself.
Do it. Damn it. One person at a time.
Susan Loind.
That's right.
Has spoken.
I have spoken. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm really psyched that you're feeling the whole storytelling thing, because you're really good at it.
Oh, thank you.
And I think, there's such power in stories, and going out into the world and sharing your stories with people is crazy healing, not just for you, but for the people hearing them. Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Nice work. And a giant thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing the story and sharing all your experiences.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I knew it would be cool.
Yeah.
It was cool.
No,
I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, no, that was really cool.
Thanks,
Susan.
Thanks
for having me in.
Maybe you'll come back another time. Tell another story.
Sure.
All right. Don't you just want to have a beer with Susan? If you ever meet her, go have a beer with her. Thank you so, so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Lucid Cafe by giving it a positive review, or helping to spread the word by letting others know about the show. Or you can become a sponsor with a one-time or monthly donation by following the link in the show notes or on the podcast page of my website, lucidpathwellness.com. Until next time.